ॐ विष्णुपराय कृष्णपुष्पाय भूतले श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनि नामिनि नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणी. So, Om Ganat Timidandasha Gananjana Shlokaya Chakshun and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances and to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we welcome everybody tonight to the virtual Sunday feast. And we're going to be reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Adi Lila in chapter 12 and beginning with text 18. And this chapter is about the various expansions of Dvaitacharya and Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So it's a very important chapter. So Dvaitacharya, of course, is Vishnu Tattva, his expansion of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and sometimes called Sadashiva, sometimes considered Mahavishnu, same person anyway. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami is an incarnation of, or avatar, of Srimati Radharani, both members of the Panchatattva. Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva Siddhi Gaur, Bhaktivrinda. So Panchatattva means the five basic aspects of the absolute truth, or the different tattva can mean basically truth. Some people translate it like that. Also means something that continues to exist, like nasato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha ubayarapi drishtoantas twaniostat vidarshavi, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. Something that's eternal, an eternal category, an eternal aspect of the absolute truth. And so there's the eternal aspect of the absolute truth, which is Krishna himself, Vishnu Tattva. There's the eternal aspect of the absolute truth, which is the Shakti, or the internal potency of the Lord. And there's the eternal aspect of the absolute truth, who's Jiva soul. So we have those three as members of the Panchatattva. Like Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaitacharya, they're all Vishnu Tattva. Krishna, they're all Krishna, acting differently. You know, this is the amazing aspect or understanding of the Supreme Personality of God. And sometimes we say that this is achincha, that Krishna can expand himself or act in unlimited places simultaneously, exhibiting different aspects of his personality. So when we talk about Advaitacharya or Lord Nityananda, we're not talking about a different person. You know, this is like I saw something, this is a funny joke today, where people have a misunderstanding that in India people worship many gods. So there was a funny play that was put on that a man from the UK, it was a play, came to India, and he said, "You have to worship God." And the person in India was saying, "Which God?" And then, misunderstanding. And then he said, "The God." And then the person in India said, "What's his name?" And the person in the West said, "God." And the person in India said, "But you must have a name." He said, "You're crazy. You don't have a name for God? We have so many names for God." Anyway, so it's not that all the demigods are God, but God, Krishna, has many different names. That's why you have the Vishnu Sahasranama, you know, the thousand names of Lord Vishnu. Even there's a Nrisimha Kavacha, Nrisimha Sahasranama. And even as far as Krishna's expansion of Radharani, there's a Radha Sahasranama. It's amazing, isn't it? So there's unlimited names, as Lord Chaitanya states, Nam Namakari Bahudha Nidra Sarva Shaktish. And all those names, the Lord's potency is invested. And so he has hundreds of millions of names, unlimited names, actually not just hundreds of millions, unlimited names. And all those names refer to the same person, but the same person doing something different, exhibiting different aspects of his personality. Just like we all have different aspects of our personality, we remain the same person. For example, you know, I'm sitting here, this is the sannyasi aspect of my personality. And then when I go home to see my mother, it's not the sannyasi aspect of my personality anymore. It's the my baby son aspect of personality. Because a mother will never see her child as a sannyasi. A mother will always say, you know, my baby. But I'm the same person, but in different circumstances, I act differently, and I'm referred to by different names, and I have different types of relationships. That's normal. But the interesting thing is the number of relationships and circumstances that I have is very limited. I mean, probably there's about 10, or maybe less. I haven't even counted them. But the number of circumstances and relationships that Krishna has is ananta, unlimited. That's why even Krishna's incarnation, expansion of Ananta Shesh can't come to an end of them. He just goes on and they expand. Not only are they unlimited, but Krishna's expansions expand. Krishna's glories expand so that they can't be measured, even by Krishna himself in the expansions of Ananta Shesh. And it's so wonderful seeing the different expansions of Krishna, and of course Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are the same. But it's so wonderful seeing that because by the influence of Yogamaya, sometimes one expansion is not aware of what the other expansion is doing. And even though it's the same person. And how to understand that? It cannot be understood. Because we are limited. Krishna is unlimited, Ananta. Ananta Rupam, Advaita Chutadadi, Ananta Rupam Ajam Purana, Purasham Navayovanam Cha. So if we try to squeeze all that in our tiny little brains, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Just like the story that Prabhupada told about this, about Narada Muni went to the Vaikuntha, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but Narada Muni went to the Vaikuntha planets and he was told by Lord Narayan to say to a Brahmin and to a cobbler that Lord Narayan is putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmin said, impossible, because he was losing his tiny brain. And the cobbler, he said, yeah, what's the problem? As a cobbler, he wasn't using his tiny brain. Probably cobbler had less of a brain than a Brahmin. So he figured he didn't, you know, sometimes it's better to be not so intelligent, or as Prabhupada would say, overly intelligent. So the cobbler, he said, yeah, sure. And Narada Muni said, how is it possible? And then the cobbler said that he can put a whole tree into a seed, or many trees. And that's pretty amazing. You put many trees into a seed, and each one of those trees will develop more seeds that will have many trees in them too. And that's pretty much inconceivable. Even if you look at the material energy, and one of the subjects that I studied was called microbiology. It's just incredible what's going on in the cell. It's inconceivable what's happening in each and every cell in our body. I mean, the microbiologists can't, they know a few of the elements in there, you know, but really they can't figure out what's happening in the cell with all the billions and billions of interactions that are occurring every second within every single cell. And it's all coordinated. All the cells are coordinating with each other. They must have like, intranet in the body, which they communicate and they send messages, okay, time to grow, like that. So the whole thing is like inconceivable. Material energy is inconceivable, spiritual energy is inconceivable, and what to speak of the person who created it all. He must be certainly inconceivable. So anyway, so that's the Panchatattva. You know, you got three of the personalities who are the same person interacting with each other in interesting ways. And sometimes it appears they don't even know what each other is doing. And that's pretty amazing. Okay. And so now we're going to talk about Advaitacharya. Actually, this particular section is about Advaitacharya. And later we'll get to get out our Pandit Goswami. So One thing that was mentioned previously in this chapter was that Dwaitacharya's children. He had six children. And three of them grew up nicely, and three of them became non-devotees. So he didn't really like the three that became non-devotees. This is really interesting. And he trained them all up as devotees, but the reason that three of them became non-devotees is because they had bad association. And they became against Krishna consciousness in the sense that they thought Krishna was simply a manifestation of the Brahman rather than the Brahman coming from Krishna. We know from the Gita that Brahmano hi pratishtaham, the Brahman comes from Krishna rather than vice versa. So anyway, so now we're going to hear about some of Dwaitacharya's sons. So the first one, of course, we heard about yesterday was Achyutananda, who was the eldest son of Dwaitacharya. Now, Achyutananda, he was a great pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya would play with him, and also Achyutananda knew the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so well that Achyutananda ended up chastising his father for doing what he called presenting the philosophy improperly. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Good to see you. We've been missing you. Welcome. So with this COVID, we haven't seen a lot of people for a long period of time. So that was the Achyutananda we talked about yesterday. And today we're going to talk about another son of Dwaitacharya named Krishna Mishra. So we're going to read from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is written by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Bengali, and there's a lot of Sanskrit in there too. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was an amazing poet. At the age of like 80 years old, he composed this Chaitanya Charitamrita when he was practically blind, had just gone to Vrindavan, left his home, had no visible means of support, but simply an amazing, brilliant personality. So we're going to read some Bengali here. Krishna Mishra Namahara Acharya Tanaya Chaitanya Gashani Vashe Anhara Vridaya. Krishna Mishra was the son of Dwaitacharya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always sat in his heart. Shri Gopala Name Ara Acharya Suta Tanhara Charita Shuna Achyanta Bhuta. And that was the third one, is Gopal. Sri Gopal was another son of Sri Dwaitacharya Prabhu. Now just hear about his characteristics, for they are all very wonderful. So it's described that Sri Gopal was one of the three devoted sons of Dwaitacharya, as described in the Majalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 12, verses 143 through 149. Gundicha Mandire Mahaprabhura Samukhe Kirtane Nartana Kare Bada Prema Sukhe. When Lord Chaitanya personally cleansed the Gundicha Mandir in Jagannath Puri, Gopal danced in front of the Lord with great love and happiness. And Prabhupada explains that the Gundicha Mandir is situated in Jagannath Puri, and every year Jagannath Balabhadra and Subhadra come there from the Jagannath temple to stay there for 8 days. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived at Jagannath Puri, every year he personally cleansed his temple with his principal devotees. The Gundicha Marjana chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Majalila chapter 12 describes this vividly. So in the city of Jagannath Puri, which some of you may be familiar with, there's the main temple. And in that main temple, of course, Lord Jagannath is worshipped along with his brother and sister, Baladeva and Subhadra. And these deities of Jagannath, Baladeva and Subhadra are sometimes described as half-finished deities. But that's one explanation, that the deities, you know, they look unusual, perhaps different than any other deities that anyone's ever seen. And one explanation is that the king Indradunya was having the deities carved, and the sculptor, who happened to be Vishwakarma, told him, you better not interfere with my carving, because if you interfere with my carving, I'm leaving. So he was listening every day, hearing the chip, 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 chip on the wood. And one day he didn't hear the chip, 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 chip. And he thought, I'm not going to interfere with him. But his wife told him, you better go interfere and see what's happening. So he walked in, he saw the half-finished deities. So that's one explanation. And then Krishna wanted to be worshipped in that way. But there's a more esoteric explanation of that. And the more esoteric is that once upon a time, when Krishna was in Dwarka, his wives wanted to hear about his activities in Vrindavan. And so they naturally went to Krishna's sister, Rohini, who happens to be Balaram's mother, okay? Because she was there in Vrindavan, and she was also there in Dwarka, and also in Mathura. You know, she was married to Vasudev, another wife of Vasudev. So they went to her and said, please tell us about the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan. And she said, there's a problem. If I tell you about Krishna's activities in Vrindavan, and Krishna overhears this, he's going to just like want to go to Vrindavan or have some traumatic experience. He'll become unconscious. So she said, we got to figure out a way so that Krishna or Balaram or Subhadra don't hear about these things. So she called for Subhadra and she said, Subhadra, I want you to guard the door. Subhadra, of course, was Krishna's sister, married to Arjuna. And she's also considered like Yogamaya, the internal potency of the Lord. So they called for Subhadra, and Subhadra told Subhadra, stand at the door, make sure that nobody comes, nobody hears what's going on inside, and you don't listen either. So you know what happens if you tell someone not to listen. I mean, there's naturally an inclination. So what happened is that she put her ear to the door. And when she heard about Krishna's fabulous ecstatic pastimes in Vrindavan, and she wasn't there at that time in Vrindavan, so she became ecstatic and her arms like shrunk up like that. And she became like the deity of Subhadra. And then Balaram happened to walk by and he saw that his sister was in such a state. And he thought, what's going on? And he put his ear to the door and he heard it, and Balaram started to look like the Balaram deity, Baladev deity. And the same thing happened to Krishna. Because they were feeling intense separation. See, the deities of Jagannath Puri are deities of intense separation, what we call Vipralamba deities. Because even the place where they are, Jagannath Puri, represents, in one sense, Kurukshetra, in one sense, Dwarka, another sense, Kurukshetra. Because in Kurukshetra, what happened is that Krishna, after he left Vrindavan, there was a time for an eclipse, and the residents of Vrindavan and many people from all over India came to Kurukshetra to see that eclipse, to celebrate or commemorate that eclipse. Hare Krishna, good to see you. To celebrate or commemorate that eclipse in a holy place, because Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, as described in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Samaveti Yayutsabha, the Pandavas and the Kurus assembled in the place of Dharma known as Kurukshetra. So basically everybody came there, and when the gopis and the resident Vrindavan came to Kurukshetra, they tried to drag Krishna back to Vrindavan because they couldn't really relate to him when he was in the mood at Kurukshetra. It was like the Dwarka mood. You know, Krishna's there as a king. It's like, I mean, like if someone's married to a king, for example, and you go, and the wife goes to the palace, or married to the president of the United States or something. And the wife goes to the palace and sees her husband with a crown. She says, you know, come home already. You know, you're late for dinner. So the gopis, in the same way, wanted to bring Krishna home, because home is actually Vrindavan. Dwarka and Mathura are where Krishna works. You understand the difference? So so Kurukshetra represents that. And the Rath Yatra ceremony is representing when the residents of Vrindavan dragged or attempted to drag Krishna back to Vrindavan, and they dragged them back to the Gundicha temple, which is mentioned here. Gundicha temple is called the Gundicha temple because it's named after a queen, actually. It was interesting. King named the temple after his queen. But anyway, so the Gundicha temple represents Vrindavan, and the Jagannath temple there, the original temple, represents Dwarka or Kurukshetra, you know, one of the two. So the time of the Rath Yatra ceremony, wow, a lot of guests tonight for a virtual festival. So at the time of the Rath Yatra ceremony, everybody observes social distancing. So at the time of the Rath Yatra ceremony, you have the meditation of bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. That's a symbolism of the Rath Yatra, and it's quite a complicated procedure. However, before you could bring Krishna back to Vrindavan, here we're talking about the Gundicha temple, this particular purport, you have to clean Vrindavan, which basically, if you want the Lord to be situated in your heart in his original aspect, you have to clean your heart. Just like we cleanse the temple. It's called Mandira Marjanado. So there's this Gundicha Marjana ceremony, which is being referred to here. It's actually, Prabhupada says this right here in the purport, Gundicha Marjana's chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which Lord Chaitanya and his associates cleanse the Gundicha temple. So that's very important for us to cleanse the heart. So anyway, so every year, wow, there's a, I think he's a stink bug. So every year, that's why I don't want him on me. So every year, Lord Chaitanya would do this right before the Rath Yatra. And they would bring the devotees there. And another thing is, when Lord Jagannath would go, and Subhadra and Baladev would go to this Gundicha temple, guess what happened? Lord Chaitanya, who was normally in a very sober mood in Jagannath Puri, became like a little boy, and he became very playful. So it reflects the same sort of mood that Krishna had in Dwarka, you know, very sober mood. You don't really find Krishna in Dwarka stealing butter or anything like that, or playing a flute. As much as you may see that in Indian movies, it's not like that. When Krishna is in Dwarka, he was very serious. But when he goes to, when he was in Vrindavan, he wasn't so serious. You know, stealing butter, pinching babies, sometimes even passing urine on the floor of people when they tried to hide the butter from him, and being extremely tricky, holding on to the tail of the calves and letting the calves pull him through the field. But you never see Krishna Dwarkadish doing that. Dwarkadish, you know, is very serious. He's married, nice wives, and they all behave themselves, has nice sons, except for Samba sometimes, but anyway. But you know, everything's really pukka. In Vrindavan, everything is really loose. So when Lord Chaitanya enacts this pastime of taking Lord Jagannath to the Gundicha temple, he becomes like that too. He becomes so childlike in his behavior that he and his associates, including Advaitacharya, who was mentioned in this particular chapter, they start acting like children. What do I mean by that? They actually like go swimming in these lakes right near the temple at Narendra Sarovara, like that, and they start having fights. I mean, you have this fight like between Lord Nityananda and Advaitacharya where, I mean, not punching fights, you know, splashing water fights. So that Lord Nityananda is splashing water at Advaitacharya, and Advaitacharya is splashing water at Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda wins because he's younger. And Advaitacharya starts yelling at him, basically. And in this way, they have so many playful activities in Vrindavan. So anyway, so this Gundicha temple, or the activities around the Gundicha temple, are very, very important in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, because it represents the ultimate goal in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And the methodology for achieving that ultimate goal, which is Chaito Dharvana Marjanam, Bhava Mahad Bhagni Nirvapanam, as described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means cleansing the heart. Cleansing the heart is accomplished by Krishna. Hridyantaksto Yabhadrani Vinunati Suritsatam Shrinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana, as described in the Bhagavatam. That by the process of what? Shrinvata Swakata Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna, it's the most pious, elevated process, Punya Shravana Kirtana. And Ridyam Takshto Yabhadrani, that Krishna within the heart cleanses the heart, because we're not capable of cleaning our own hearts. It's just not possible. Prabhupada said that our hearts in this material world are something like pieces of coal. Because if you take a piece of coal and you cleanse it, you just get dirty and the coal never gets cleaned. So if we cleanse our hearts by this Harinam process, you know, Chaito Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Mahad Bhakti Nirvapanam, this chanting of the Lord's holy names, Harinam, 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 Evakevalom, Kalo Nisteva, 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 Gatiranyata, as the Brihad Naradiya Purana says, that is the only way in this Kali Yuga, then Krishna himself does the cleansing, and then we can actually perceive Vrindavan in our hearts. So the heart of a devotee becomes, I'm making a comparison here, like the Gundicha temple. So the Rath Yatra ceremony is actually entering into Vrindavan in your heart with Krishna. So that's what's being mentioned here. Interesting explanation. So we'll go on to the next verse. Nana bhavodgama dehe adbhut zanartana dvigoshani harivale anandita mana. Or Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Dvaita Prabhu chanted the Hare Krishna mantra and danced. There were various ecstatic symptoms in their bodies and their minds were very pleased. Nachite, nachite, gopala haila murchita umete parila dehe nahika sambita. While all of them danced, Gopal dancing and dancing fainted and fell to the ground unconscious. Duhita haila acharya putra kole nana rakshakare nasingera mantra padiya. Advaita Acharya Prabhu became very unhappy. Taking his son on his lap, he began to chant the Nrsimha mantra for his protection. So in other words, Gopal became so ecstatic. This is called a Vyabhachari Bhava, like an uncontrolled, ecstatic, unpredictable, ecstatic emotion, that he lost consciousness and everyone thought he was dying or dead as one of the symptoms of ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya also sometimes exhibited that. And this is a very interesting story. Nana mantra padena charya nahaya chetana acharya raduke vaishnava karena krandana. Advaita Acharya chanted various mantras, but Gopal did not come to consciousness. Thus all the Vaishnavas present cried in sorrow at his plight because they thought he had died. Tave Mahaprabhu tanra hriday hasta darhi Utaha Gopala Kaila Bala Hari Hari. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then put his hand on the chest of Gopal and told him, my dear Gopal, get up and chant the holy name of the Lord. Utita Gopala Prabhura Svarsha Vani Shuni Anandita Hana Sabe Kare Hari Vani. When he heard the sound and felt the touch of the Lord, Gopal immediately got up and all the Vaishnavas chanted the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in jubilation. Achayera Araputra Shivalavram Araputra Sarupas Shaka Jagadisha Nam. The other sons of Advaita Acharya were Sri Balaram, Sarupa, and Jagadish. And Prabhupada says in his purport, the Sanskrit book, Advaita Charita states that Balaram, Swarupa, and Jagadish were the fourth, fifth, and sixth sons of Advaita Acharya. Therefore, Sri Advaita Acharya had six sons, Balaram, Swarupa, and Jagadish. Being smartas or Mayavadis were rejected by Vaishnava society. Sometimes Mayavadis pose themselves as Vaishnavas and worshippers of Lord Vishnu, but actually they do not believe in Lord Vishnu as the supreme personality of Godhead, for they consider demigods like Lord Shiva, Durga, the sun god, and Ganesh equal to him. They are generally known as Panchopashaka smartas, and one should not count them among the Vaishnavas. Balaram had three wives and nine sons. The youngest son, The youngest son of his first wife was known as Madhusudana Goswami. He took the title Bhattacharya and accepted the path of the Smarta or Mayavad philosophy. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur knows that the son of Gopal Bhattacharya, Goswami Bhattacharya, Sri Radharaman Goswami Bhattacharya refused the title Goswami because it's generally meant for sannyasis, those who have taken the renounced order of life. One who is still in family life should not misuse the title Goswami. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not recognize the caste Goswamis because they were not in line of the six Goswamis in the renounced order who were direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Bhatta Raghunath Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the grihastha ashram, or the status of family life, is a sort of concession for sense gratification. Therefore, a grihastha should not falsely adopt the title Goswami. The ISKCON movement has never conferred the title Goswami upon a householder. Although all the sannyasis we have initiated in ISKCON are young, we have awarded them the titles of the renounced order of life, Swami and Goswami, because they have completely dedicated their lives to preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that not only do the householder caste Goswamis disrespect the title of Goswami, but also following the principles of the Smarta Raghunandana, they exhibit great foolishness by burning a straw image of Advaitacharya in a Shraddha ceremony, thus acting as Rakshasas and disrespecting the cause of the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is the guide for Vaishnavas. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that sometimes these smarta caste Goswamis write books on Vaishnava philosophy or commentaries on the original scriptures, but a pure devotee should cautiously avoid reading them. So I think that we need to explain all that. So a smarta is not the same as someone who is smart. You know, a smarta means someone who's into rituals, and there's different types of people who are into rituals. Some types of people who are into rituals are karma mimamsas. A karma mimamsa is like, well, just to give you an explanation of someone today who might be like a karma mimamsa, is like the Arya Samaj. That's karma mimamsa. Karma mimamsa means basically you do certain rituals and it doesn't really matter if there's a god, there's not god, preferably there's no god. Because even if there is a god, he has to follow the rituals. And mostly they're against the worship. Mostly they're against the worship of the deities in the temple. So there's a, you know, like Arya Samaj, Brahmo Samaj, like that. There's the modern version or the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. So the Karma Mimamsa philosophies, that's one type of smarta Brahman. Another type are those who are Mayavadis, who believe that ultimately everything is one, or you merge into the existence of the Lord, and you just got to follow certain procedures. Another type of smarta would be certain types of yogis who perform certain types of asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, jhana, samadhi, and think that they will reach perfection by following certain rituals, external rituals. So really, that's what smarta means. Now, you may question how someone who is the son of Advaitacharya, the three sons of Advaitacharya that are mentioned here, could have become smartas, because you have a good father, you know, naturally the sons follow in the footsteps of the father. Well, because of association. This is a very important principle that's mentioned or referred to many times in the Vedic literatures. You actually have good people became bad, and bad people became good by association. an example of a good person who became bad, or let's say two good monkeys who became bad monkeys. Does anyone know who I'm talking about? Mainda and Dvidvita. In Lord Ramchandra's pastimes, Lord Ramchandra was assisted, you know, by a monkey army. Because Hanuman was always good. Yeah, no problem with him. He's always a good guy or monkey. He's not monkey, actually. He's Kim Purush. But then you have Mainda and Dvidvita, who started to associate with some bad people, like one of Krishna's sons, actually. Bomasura, who was Krishna's son, who was good, and he became bad. And they became so bad that you had this one gorilla, it's not an ordinary gorilla, who was interfering with Balaram's pastimes. Balaram was having his dances in the Raivataka Hill. It's actually near Dwarka. It's not near Vrindavan, Raivataka Hill. He was having his dance there, and this Dvidvita gorilla was doing obscene gestures in front of them. And he was going to attempt to steal away some of the girls there. And Balaram just had to kill him. And that's interesting also, because he sought out bad association, because when he was with Lord Ram many, many millions of years before, he had offended Lakshman. So it's really interesting how one thing leads to another. You know, like even you may be Lord Ramchandra's right-hand gorilla. But if you commit an offense against Lakshman or any devotee, you lose your intelligence. And he had to be killed by Lakshman in another form, because Lakshman and Balaram are the same. You have this whole principle of the Chaturvyuha expansions. Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajuna, and Aniruddha. So you have Lord Ram, Lakshman, Bart, and Satrughna. You know, these four. You always have the four whenever the Supreme Lord appears. So by bad association, he became polluted or demoniac. And we got a nice attendance today. And so that's the point, by bad association. So the same thing happened with the Dvaitacharya's sons. They had good parents. You know, when you're talking about raising kids or anyone, there's two things. There's nurture and nature. Nurture is what you're born with. Nature is what you're born with, and nurture is what happens later on. So you have Prahlad Maharaj, who was born in a demoniac family. I mean, his father was probably as bad as any father you can imagine. Hiranyakashipu. You know, that's a pretty bad dad. Wouldn't want to have him for a father. And then what you have is that he's a great devotee of the Lord by association. He associated with Narada Muni while he was in the womb of his mother. That's amazing. Just by sound vibration, he associated with Narada Muni, and his whole consciousness became transformed. So much so that his father tried to kill him, and Lord Nrisingadev had to protect him and, you know, kill his father. So you have examples on both sides. So when you have these questions, how does someone become like this, or how does someone become like that? That's due to association. Krishna in the Gita talks about this. He says, Karanam guna sangasha sadasa janma jonishu. Many verses indicate that. By association with guna sangha, with the modes of nature, then one's mind becomes either wicked or good. And we find in the Mahabharata, and I mentioned this last night in class, but many of you were not there, that you even have Grandfather Bhishma, we have Kripacharya, Dronacharya, who had the wrong association with Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, and of course the food cooked in the kitchen by, you know, their demoniac associates. And their consciousness became polluted, and they actually, in the Mahabharata, it describes they actually became haunted or possessed by demoniac entities. And then they fought on the wrong side of the Battle of Kurukshetra. So it's a very, very important lesson pointed out here. You know, you can have the great parents, but you've got to really have good association. Or you could be a great person And we see this sometimes, even in the material realm, where someone is a very good person and then he's given power, even the connection with power and gold and followers, you know, it gets to one's mind. As they say, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, or gold corrupts. Like in Kali Yuga, you have gold, which is actually manifests the presence of Kali under certain circumstances. Not that a normal person having gold does that. But if one acquires too much wealth, it actually pollutes the consciousness. So anyway, so these are some of the points. So anybody have any questions? Not online, we're not going to be able to answer any questions, but in person, since we have a lot of people in person. Anybody have any questions about anything I said? It's nice to see everybody. It's like the good old days of the Sunday program. I hope everybody's getting their vaccine. I've had my vaccine, so I am not scared, except of Krishna. I'm not like foolish and saying, like they said with the Titanic. You know, there's this ship, the Titanic. When they launched it, they said, even God can't sink this ship. So they challenged God, and guess what? On the first voyage of the Titanic, it was sunk. So we're not invulnerable to everything, but we hope that everybody's taking care of themselves and social distancing and being practical. We believe in science and Krishna consciousness. We're not anti-scientists, or we're not superstitious or anything like that. So take care. And you know, we're not going to tell you whether to take the vaccine or not. I took it, but that's up to you all. Anybody have any questions? Aditya or anybody? Yes.
It is a little off topic, but something in relation. You spoke about Kali Yuga in the world. Reading in the first canto, Prabhupada was mentioning about eating meat.
Yes.
And there are two ways in which one meat. And there are scriptural injunctions about consumption of
meat. Yes.
So I think Prabhupada was referring that you offer that meat to
Kali.
Kali and then a question came to my mind at that time. When one does something like that, is that sinful or is that not?
If one offers meat, the goat, I'm going to tell you, we're not talking about any other type of animal now, to the goddess Kali on the full moon night, whether that's sinful, there's a reaction to it. And what you say in the goat's ear is mamsa kadati. That means the next life, I will become meat. So there's some reaction to it. I mean, at least you're doing it Vedically. But it's not prescribed in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, ekon dharma krishna nama sankirtan. But Prabhupada was making the point, but who does that anyway? I mean, very few people in India, they open up slaughterhouses in the name of Kali. I've seen that, you know, Kali slaughterhouse or whatever it is. And it's a concession for people who are going to eat meat. And hopefully they learn their lesson. I mean, if every time you had to eat, not you, of course, but you're a vegetarian. But if in any case someone had to eat meat, they had to kill the animal themselves and say, in the next life, I will become the same animal. I think that the consumption of meat would reduce rather rapidly. I would hope so. I have a lot of friends in Fiji who are raising families where they saw their parents kill the animal. For example, you know, they'd cut I don't know if I mentioned that. But anyway, they'd cut the heads off of certain animals and they'd see the blood. And they were nauseated, obviously, or poor by the whole situation. So if people had to do it themselves, they would understand the seriousness of it. Sometimes people become callous and they do it. Like a butcher, he'll keep doing it, because he just becomes callous to the situation. And it's a fact that people who work in slaughterhouses, they start to have psychological problems after some time from that whole lack of compassion or empathy, and many of them become violent towards their families later. I mean, these are sociological facts. So I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think you should offer the goat to the goddess Kali once a month, or even once a year. I think it's a bad idea, because it's, apart from the fact that it's sinful, yes it is, it's actually cruel. A human being should not inflict cruelty or inflict pain upon any other creature. I mean, I don't think I'm capable of it. I mean, as soon as I realized when I was young where meat came from, I gave it up. I went to my mother and I said, I'm not eating meat again. And this is before I became a devotee. It really had nothing to do with me becoming Krishna conscious. It was way before that. I just said, you know, this is it. It comes from a real animal. And my mother said, of course it comes from a real animal, because I would never make anything preserved, frozen, non-fresh for you. And I said, that's it. And it was a fight. But there I was, you know, the little kid. And I just realize. So I think that human beings, apart from the scriptures, should realize how cruel it is. I mean, this is it's common sense. You don't even have to be religious. I mean, it's just whew. I mean, people right now, they talk about political correctness, not offending Mr. Potato Head or Mrs. Potato Head. I don't know if you know that stuff, if you watch the news, but or not offend, you know, people talk about not offending anybody, you know, racism, sexism. And, you know, we don't want racism or sexism either, but violence is of a far worse than racism or sexism, you know, speciesism. It's cannibalism. I mean, I actually, like I mentioned, one of the places where I do a lot of preaching or have a lot of friends when I could travel, was Fiji, and Fiji used to be called the Cannibal Islands. The first Christian missionaries who went there to Fiji, they became prasadam. And they didn't eat prasadam, they became prasadam, if you understand what I mean. And the natives, they had never seen anybody with shoes before, so they cooked the shoes. And they thought, this is part of the body. And they thought, this is, you know, a little tougher, so you just make soup out of it. So, and there's cultures in the world where you're supposed to eat your grandfather. And you're supposed to get his knowledge by eating. Prabhupada talked about this, grandfather. I mean, so this craziness. So are we humans or are we cannibals? You know, I think we have to ask ourselves, apart from the scriptures, you know, whatever I may be preaching, we have to ask ourselves, are we human beings? I mean, you can eat very nicely vegetables. I've been doing it now for most of my life. You know, I'm, God knows how old I am. I'm 35 years old. And no, that's not true. You know, I'm 72 years old, and for at least the last 55 years or so, I've been vegetarian. And I've never gotten sick, basically. So, you know, I'm doing all right. And actually, every one of my family, all the males in my family passed away earlier because of dietary related, you know, illnesses like heart disease. So I'm a perfect example. Someone could be a vegetarian and still alive. I exercise every day. I run up and down. I lead kirtan. You know, I do so many things. So it's not a health problem. There's so many nice preparations one could make. As you know, in Indian cooking or in Western cooking, you have unlimited preparations. With meat, there's not much. What? So what's that, Aditya?
Not in the purport, I just saw that one point Prabhupada mentioned that grahastha ashram is a sort of consistent.
It doesn't have to be. A grahastha ashram could be used, what? Oh, okay, I got to repeat. Okay, so Dishan Narayan Prabhu asked me the question. In Grahastha Ashram, it says in the purport, it's a kind of concession for sense gratification. Well, it doesn't have to be. It can be a tool for Krishna consciousness. I mean, anything you have in this world. Like if you have a car, it could be a concession for sense gratification. Depends on how you use it. But most people, you know, they use their car to go to Disney World. Go to the beach. But anyway, so most people use their car for something that has nothing to do with spiritual life. But actually everything, everything is owned and controlled by Krishna. So if you use the Grahastha Ashram for the right purpose, then it's no longer a concession for sense gratification. It's a tool to serve Krishna. But if you use it for the wrong purpose, I mean, even the sannyasa ashram could be used as a concession for sense gratification. You know, you get some facility. I get facility as a sannyasi. You know, people bathe my feet, you know, whatever. That's it, you know, it's very enjoyable. Not really. But anyways, you know, you can, whatever position, you know, people pay your respect just because I dress like this. And, you know, that can also be taken as a concession for sense gratification. So in Kali Yuga, you know, Harinam, Harinam. You know, everybody should be engaged in, and there's no difference. Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyashi, Shudra, Kena Naya, Krishna, Tatva, Veta, Se Guru Hoy. That someone can be a guru, topmost position, whether they're Vipra, Sannyasi, Grahastha, or even from a Shudra family, if they know the science of Krishna. So, I mean, that's our philosophy. So that's the point. But Prabhupada objected here that to Grahastha is taking the name Goswami. This was the main point that Prabhupada made in the purport. Because the word Goswami is actually a title for those in the renounced order of life. But you will actually find a lot of people in India now with the hereditary title Goswami. Now, and, you know, I'm not going to go up and criticize them for that. And they're in charge of temples. And some of these people have sold the temple properties off for their own family maintenance. So this is not something that Prabhupada liked very much. People should have normal titles. Instead of Goswami, they should be whatever, you know, Sharma or Trivedi or whatever. Agarwal, that's a Vrindavan title. All the businessmen in Vrindavan are called Agarwals. So anyway, they should have a normal name like everybody else. But Goswami is referred, the word go means senses, and Swami means controller of the senses. So it's actually, Prabhupada says here in the purport, it's not meant as a hereditary title. It's meant as a title of an ashram, particular ashram. Good question. Yes, one more question.
What are different levels of association? Is there any different levels?
Yeah, there's different levels of association. I mean, the highest level is to associate with an absolutely pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada. And we can do that through his books. And it says that he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. So we should always try to take the highest level of association. I mean, normally we have to take other association. We have regular lives that most of us live. And so, but we should seek out high association, because that high association, that's sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, labhavatra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. If one takes sadhu sangha, then one gets all perfection, even for an instance association with the sadhu. So, yeah, it's a better, as far as possible, to take good association. You know, and then, you know, then we take other association throughout the day just in our normal lives. You know, we may listen to the news and get really aggravated. I remember when there was the previous president of the United States, if I watched the news too much, I would think of him 24 hours a day. You know, even had one dream of him. And I dreamt that I was a member of his cabinet in the White House. And then I thought, well, this is a little too much. We have to be compassionate, but not that compassionate. Anyway, so... So we have to really be careful about not delving too much into the material energy. And that is sometimes very attractive. Different aspects of the material energy are attractive to different people. I mean, for me, I'm attracted to science and mathematics. You know, I could read a science book all day long, and biology, science, and everything like that. And then, but I have to see, what do I need for serving Krishna? All right, I think we can end now. We have a prasadam for everybody, right? Yeah, we have prasadam, and I did turn up the heat in the hall in case anyone wants to take a little prasadam in the hall. So thank you all for coming. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All right, you can go offline.